Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come, Joel. Seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 score scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, guys.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop all your text, all your voicemails. Anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. We're going to get right to it. Matt and I have a very special guest on the podcast today. That is Mark Schanowski, been covering the NBA and the Bulls for a very, very long time. Most recently doing color for the Windy City Bulls and for NBC Sports Chicago. So check out his work at Mark Schanowski on Twitter. Very excited to talk to him. It's been a while since Matt and I have gotten a chance to talk with him. So all good stuff, all NBA, all Bulls, and how the G League experience has been among a bunch of other things. So let's get right to it. Mark Schanowski.
Kept our flexibility long term, which was also important to us.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to the Locked On Bulls podcast, I should say, a guy who I have had the pleasure to work with over at NBC Sports Chicago. He recently made the transition from in the studio to on the court calling Windy City Bulls games this past season. He's got 30 years of experience covering the Chicago sports scene. He is the one, the only Mark Schanowski. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. Mark, how are you doing, man? So, Mark, before we get to the Bulls and their current situation, we were curious on your thoughts about what's been going on in the NBA right now. They certainly seem to be the most forward-thinking league as far as having a plan right now and putting that plan into action to resume their season, or in MLB's situation, start their season amid the pandemic and everything else going on. What have your reaction been to some NBA players speaking up recently, not only concerned about the pandemic, but about the protests and the racial injustice that's going on across the country right now that appear to be bigger than basketball?
Well, I certainly understand that perspective, but it was kind of odd that the one player that really is leading the charge in that area is Kyrie Irving, who was not going to play anymore this season anyway. Obviously, every player has their own way of looking at the situation. It's going to be a hardship on these players to be away from their families for long periods of time. But in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement, I don't know that being away from playing basketball is necessarily going to impact what kind of voice they can have on that social front. I think, like Commissioner Adam Silver mentioned yesterday in his interview on ESPN, is that being in Orlando with the whole world watching these basketball games, I think gives them a bigger forum to talk about issues that affect them. And I think that that's something that maybe Kyrie Irving and some of the other players who were on this conference call last weekend aren't considering. I think that the social platform for players like LeBron James and others, after playing through the playoffs, getting into the NBA Finals, will be very impactful. So it's just a different way of looking at things. I've got the sense that Commissioner Silver is confident that he can negotiate with the Players Association and find a middle ground that's going to make everybody happy. But there may be a handful of players that decide that for whatever reason they're not going to want to go to Orlando. But I think the teams that have the best shot at the championship, you'll see most of their players are going to be there. Even Dwight Howard, who was outspoken saying that basketball is just a distraction right now, later said that he'll fall in line if the decision is to play basketball. So I think that we're going to have probably, upwards of 90% of the players that are eligible to go to Orlando will go. And I think the playoffs are going to be a lot of fun to watch once we get there.
I guess going through the entire scope of doing the Disney plan and coming up with agreements that not only the players could agree to, but also that makes sense for the league, I was kind of shocked. And I know that the social justice thing had just started over the current, like last 2-3 weeks, especially putting on notice for the players and returning to play and what the importance of that would be and not wanting to overshadow that. But I'm curious too of some of their health, there's concerns with the COVID-19 and their health concerns overall of having to stay kind of basically in this one area of Disney and not really having a whole lot of freedom. I mean, it seems like they agreed to the initial scenario, and then a lot of the players for the first time were like, wait, hold on one second. What are we doing? What's the plan again? I'm not sure I really understand what we're going to actually be doing. I feel like the players maybe have the most voice out of anybody in any other league too. And when you said you feel confident about Adam Silver and the players coming to some type of agreement, I feel confident as well. Do you see any hiccups that they could have, though, concerning the health part of the Disney plan that they've kind of put together? It's not complete yet, but do you see any popping up concerns from the players?
Well, I think something that could happen between now and July 30th, when they're hoping to get the games going again, is they're going to have to keep tracking these numbers of new cases in Florida. I don't know if you guys have been following that very closely, but since they opened up the state really completely in Florida, the cases have spiked. The numbers are going up at a kind of an alarming rate. I believe I saw yesterday they doubled from the day before, and they keep setting new records for new cases. And if you're a player in your home area looking at what's going on in Florida and you've got a family, you're thinking, I'm going to leave my wife and children and go into that area that's at a high rate of infection. Obviously, they're going to put them in secure areas, and they're going to have testing, if not on a daily basis, every other day. So from that sense, they'll try to get on top of it the best they can. But if there's a huge spike in cases in the Orlando area, I'm sure that will be more players that may decide, you know what, this isn't for me. And that's something that the league and the Players Association will certainly monitor over the next 6 weeks. And if that becomes more of an issue, there could be a scenario where they say, you know what, we all have the best intentions, but this isn't safe and we're going to call the whole thing off.
A real quick follow-up to that. I was just thinking, in terms of like competitive play, so everything goes smoothly and the players in the league agree to coming back and playing. The one thing that I can't get past is Adam Silver had mentioned that if a player does test positive, that they were going to remove him from play and quarantine him for 14 days. But to me, I'm thinking about it like, what happens if, say, the Milwaukee Bucks get in the Eastern Conference Finals and Giannis and Chris Middleton both test positive right at the start of the series? Okay. Are you going to quarantine both of those guys for 2 weeks and force them to play in that series? That's something that I guess I haven't really seen explained, and I don't know how they're going to combat any of that. Do you have any kind of understanding of that, or do you see that as a huge hiccup?
No, that's a big problem. I mean, obviously, if you had the two players you mentioned, or LeBron James or Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, test positive for the virus and are forced to quarantine for 2 weeks, that was going to mean probably the end of that team's playoff run. And when you talk about asterisks, you couldn't find enough to put next to the champion this year if a number of star players are put out because of testing positive for the virus. It is a real concern for the league. I'm sure it's a real concern for the Players Association. And, you know, it almost makes you wonder, is it really worth going through all this to try to crown a champion with all the realities that are in front of us as to what's going on with the virus? I know that there is a school of thought that maybe we should just regroup and start a new season in December when maybe you can get fans in the stands again. But there's just so much unknown. It just seems like with every week, the more we learn about the virus, the more we realize we don't know. And until they can find some kind of workable vaccine, there are going to be flaws in any plan that's put forward. I know that these sports leagues, the NBA and the NHL, MLS, are committed to trying to get going again. But whether or not it's going to go through without a number of problems along the way, only time will tell.
Yeah, Mark, you mentioned the plan for the league to start up again in December, and that appears to be the case, even if they not just decide to cancel this season or postpone the startup date. But even if they finish this season, we've heard a date around maybe Christmas Day as the opening day. We even heard recently December 1st as a date that was thrown out there. I'm curious to get your take on this adjusted schedule that the NBA is looking at here, because they've talked a lot in recent years about pushing the NBA calendar forward a little bit. Maybe they don't have to try and rival with the NFL for ratings in the first couple months of their season, and then can basically have all of winter and spring and summer to really dominate the TV ratings. Clearly, the league right now is just trying to make up some of that lost revenue for these games to finish this season. Do you like the idea of that becoming a permanent change, though, with this is going to be a crazy tight offseason this year, but moving forward, maybe just adjusting the NBA calendar to start in, closer towards the holiday season as opposed to mid to late October?
Well, it's pretty obvious that football, specifically the NFL, is king in the sports environment in this country, and the NBA is looking at an opportunity. If they push the calendar back, they're feeling like, hey, we can go head-to-head with Major League Baseball, and we can squash them. I mean, we have a younger fan base, a growing fan base, where MLB is losing a lot of its fans, particularly the way they're bungling the current labor negotiations. I think the league is looking at an opportunity to get bigger numbers in the summer to really establish themselves as the number one sport through spring and summer, and I think that's something that a lot of owners have pushed forward even before the suspension hit because of the virus. So I think that's something that probably will become a permanent change in the NBA landscape. It'll be a little bit different. You know, seeing the entire playoffs being held in the summertime when it's 90 degrees outside and people want to go outside and do things, it'll be, for a fan base, it'll be a small inconvenience, but I think it'll be fun to watch those games, the peak playoff games going in July and August, and then you go right into the NFL season. So baseball is the one I think that's going to be impacted the most by this, and I think that the owners are looking at the best way to increase revenues, and I think this is something that can probably project to bigger TV ratings down the line.
And as for this season, do you think that timeline is realistic? If they do, in fact, finish the season starting sometime toward the end of July, and then the finals conclude sometime in around the first or second week of October, then you've got the draft. It seems like most certainly the draft combine will be canceled, but you've got draft, you've got free agency. Basically, you're talking about the last two teams standing in the finals having maybe a month or so of actual offseason to get themselves ready for training camp. Do you think that that is actually something the NBA could pull off and that the players would be okay with doing?
I think the NBA might even consider a shortened season for 2020-21, maybe going with a 70-game schedule, because as you know, the stars drive the league, and anybody who wants to get their brand out there in the Tokyo Olympics wants to make sure that they have that opportunity. That's one of the forces that's at work right now. The other force, of course, is to try to improve TV ratings and increase overall revenues for the league. But there are a number of young players, young stars in the league that would like to get their brand out to the international marketplace in the Olympics, which are going to be held, of course, in the summer of 2021. So I think next season they want to try to wrap things up by early July as opposed to maybe mid-August. So you could see maybe a condensed schedule, or maybe the Players Association would agree to more back-to-back games to try to get 82 games in a shorter time frame. What we're going to see, of course, then is you're going to see more load management. You're probably going to see more nagging type of soft tissue injuries, and you're going to see more players sitting out games. There's no perfect solution when you have a global pandemic, and I know that all the leaders of the basketball, the NBA and the Players Association are trying to figure out what's best for everybody involved. I don't think any plan they could put forward is going to be perfect, but I think that the Players Association would agree to a short turnaround this one time if they're going to indicate that the December start is going to become a permanent change to the schedule down the road.
Mark, I'm very curious about something a lot of, I feel like a lot of basketball fans haven't necessarily touched on, and maybe it's not of a huge concern to them, but it's super interesting to me. It was the G League's attempt to basically take over, or at least the steps to take over and provide opportunities for college kids or kids that are coming out of high school not to go to college, but actually go and get paid. I saw recently last week, Florida passed a bill to start in 2021 that will allow any of their athletes to make payments for their own likeness, basically sell autographs, do the whole go do a car commercial type of thing in Florida only as soon as next year. I know California had a bill as well that doesn't get passed till 2023. I was curious your thoughts, though, how that might affect the G League. I know it was talked about a lot as like the new avenue for a lot of the high schoolers to go through. Have you seen, just from the year that you've covered the G League and doing the games for the Windy City Bulls, has that been a major talk of importance among players? Do you see that as a potential avenue of slowing down the G League as a possible another option, with now a whole state basically allowing kids to make money off their own likeness?
Yeah, first of all, I think it's about time that college athletes get the opportunity to profit off their likeness. The schools are selling jerseys and other merchandise with players' names on it. and making, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, and the players aren't seeing any of that. And of course, the NCAA and the television networks are making millions of dollars off the TV rights that these players are featured in. So I think that's a great start to trying to get some money in the pockets of these student athletes. As far as the G League option, a lot of people don't realize that that was actually a possibility for this previous season. The problem was that they were only offering, I believe the ceiling was like $125,000 for a player to go straight from high school to the G League. So that was going to be much higher than what the normal G League player would make, but it really wasn't enough to entice many, well, no players to pass up the college route and go G League. And another thing people haven't probably realized, if they haven't really read a lot about this, is that this team is going to be basically separate from the normal G League operations. Brian Shaw is going to be the coach. They're going to be based in the Los Angeles area, and they're going to be, it's going to be a developmental league more than another G League franchise. They're going to be working with experienced coaches and former players to develop NBA skill sets. They're going to play games against other international teams around the world, and occasionally they'll play against other G League teams, but their games will not count in the G League standings, and they won't be affiliated with any league teams. So even though they will technically be a G League franchise, they really will be separate from the regular mix of players and teams.
I want to tell our Locked On Bulls listeners about one of my new favorite life hacks. It's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on your personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem. I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your laptop, or your tablet. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know info from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. That's right, with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you're working out. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library. From self-help, business, health to history books, Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles that, let's be honest, you always meant to read, but you never quite had time to. I like to use Blinkist right at the start of my day while I'm having my first cup of coffee. Before I dive into the wide world of sports and all the sports headlines, I use Blinkist for a little bit to do a little bit of self-improvement, expanding my horizons, expanding my wealth of information outside of the world of sports. Because let's be honest, there is more to the world than sports, even though we don't like to admit it on a regular basis. And here's the best part. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for you, our Locked On Bulls audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial, and save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
Before we get back to Mark Schanowski and our conversation with him, I want to tell you guys about our sponsor in Rock Auto. They've been a fantastic sponsor of the Locked On Bulls podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network for over a month now. With ever-increasing number of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all of your parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX, and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer. Choosing the brands the warehouse happens to carry, you have computer access and to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. One reason to repair and maintain your car is to save money that you can then use for important things like mortgage or food. And we know how important that is today. Why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, or even 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership? Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered right to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkable and easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand specifically and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Now back to Mark Schanowski.
We're talking all things hoops here on Locked On Bulls with our guy, Mark Schanowski. Mark, before we transition to the Bulls, because we're kind of right there on the subject, let's talk a little bit about your experience calling these Windy City Bulls games. I tuned in and watched a number of them. It seemed like you were having a lot of fun on the call. Certainly a different world than being an in-studio pregame, halftime, postgame anchor. What was your experience like? Did you find any interesting challenges that maybe you didn't anticipate? And what was your favorite part about that gig this season?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Everybody with the Windy City Bulls was fantastic. It was a wonderful experience. Of course, the games, most of them were run on tape delay on NBC Sports Chicago. I think there were 9 games that were run live. And my broadcast partner, Julio Rauseo, has been doing play-by-play for them for a couple of years now. He does a wonderful job. And when they first said, you know, I was thinking about trying to do some play-by-play, and I was looking at different colleges and the G League as a possibility. And when I talked to the Windy City Bulls, they said, well, we have our play-by-play guy already in place. Would you be interested in doing color? And I thought, wow, that's interesting, because normally that's an automatic slot for a former player. But because of the fact that I'm so closely associated with the Bulls, and because of my age, I have so much experience in terms of knowing the league, and had some stories that I'm sure they felt I could share with their audience, they wanted to bring me on. And initially, you know, I didn't know how that fit was going to work, but as the games wore on, I thought we developed some pretty good chemistry. The biggest challenges were working at Sears Center Arena. It's not like being at an NBA arena where you have instant access to stats. I had to turn around away from the action to look at the scoreboard to get updated totals for points and rebounds and things, because they didn't have a computer feed in there where you could get live stats. And we had one monitor in front of us that was okay, but you know, we didn't have the amount of replays that you would see on an NBA broadcast. So there were some challenges along the way, but I felt like it was a good experience, and you know, I'm hoping that they'll ask me back to do the games again next season.
How do you think this is going to affect the G League as a whole? Like, I know with the NBA not playing and all the sports leagues not playing, but we are even seeing some detriment in Major League Baseball to their minor leagues. Do you feel like this is going to have any effect on the growth of the G League as a whole, or what the NBA has done to make the G League so successful over the last several years? Do you feel like this is going to kind of put a wrench in things, or do you feel like once the games come back, things should go smoothly again, and there's still going to be attention, there's still going to be players that want to play and develop in that G League?
Well, I know in talking with Windy City Bulls officials, they felt like the parent team was really supportive of what they were doing in terms of player development and the way they ran their program, and really getting players indoctrinated into the Bulls way. You know, they have the same play calls, the same systems on offense and defense. So if there is going to be a call up from the G League, there's no real transition. They know all the play calls. They're ready to go right away. And I think that last season, 28 of the 30 NBA teams had their own G League affiliate. One of the teams that wasn't was the Denver Nuggets, and that's why the Windy City Bulls had several players along the way that were in the Nuggets organization. They had Bol Bol for a while, P.J. Dozier, who was a very good player, you know, and those guys would come down and play some games, and then they would go back to Denver. I think that because of the financial stress it's going to be on some organizations, they may look to younger talent to fill out the back end of the rosters, and that might make the G League teams even more important in trying to develop guys that can come up at minimum salary and maybe fill the 10, 11, 12, 13 spots in the roster, so you're not paying out the NBA minimum for some of these guys or more than that for guys on the back end who really aren't getting any minutes in your rotation.
Transitioning to the Bulls situation specifically now, Mark, they are one of the 8 delete teams, as they have been dubbed, the 8 worst record teams in the league that are not invited back to the continuation of the season down in Florida. Obviously, there are benefits as well as negatives to their situation as being a team left out. They are minimizing risk of being one of those teams in the bubble, and especially in Florida, where, as you said, the numbers have been spiking recently. You're not going to take unnecessary risk injuring your players, especially some of the core young pieces of this roster right now that the new front office is tasked to come in and evaluate. So you don't get the opportunity to evaluate this roster, but you're also not risking any harm being done to this roster. My personal opinion, I think the positives far outweigh the negatives when it comes to the Bulls not being asked back, considering just how dreadfully their season was going anyway. I didn't think there was a whole lot to gain. Are you of the same opinion, or do you wish the Bulls would have been able to continue their season?
I think the new front office would have loved the opportunity to see the young guys play 8 games and really get a first-hand look at what they've got on their roster. Obviously, they've pored over the game tape. They've watched every game, I'm sure, numerous times and made some conclusions as to what they have on the roster and who their core pieces are going forward. But I think they would have loved to add the players in a training camp situation at the Advocate Center, then going to Orlando, getting 3 weeks of practice in, and then playing the 8 games. I think it would have been really beneficial. The only hitch in that, of course, is, you know, then you'd have to make a decision on who was going to coach the team, and I don't know if they're prepared to do that right now. That would have probably sped up the time frame on what the decision was going to be made with the current coaching staff. But from a perspective of Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley, I think they would have loved to see these guys in game competition.
It's going to be difficult for them. And I was, Matt and I have kind of gone back and forth on this of like, even if they come back for some type of, I don't know, if they know that they're even struggling to come back and play the competitive games that mean something. They're talking about a Elite Eight tournament potentially of some play, so they could get guys out there to at least play some games. They don't have that layoff of 10 months or so before they're actually playing games again. I'm curious if this is going to be very difficult, and if I know that they're up to the task, but very difficult not only for them as evaluators, but for Bulls fans too. It's put Bulls fans in a unique situation where we're almost asked as fans to have a little bit more patience than we may have had there been no pandemic and this just been a restart of the front office in general. I think there would have been a little bit more hesitancy to push and go forward quicker. But now I think this leaves the front office at least a little bit of opportunity to have some more patience, just because the seasons for the next, this season, finishing this one up and then going into next season is going to be completely wacky. So I feel like from a standpoint of a Bulls fan, is it's given at least their new front office a little bit longer of a leash with Bulls fans, new and old. I don't know how you feel about that and how they're going to be able to evaluate all of these guys and make decisions relatively quickly.
Yeah, I think it definitely pushes the whole calendar on the rebuild back a year. You know, this year they were hoping to see development in a lot of the young players. Obviously, they stated on media day that the playoffs was going to be the goal. With a weak Eastern Conference, with the last couple of playoff spots right now with teams under 500, if things would have come together the way they had hoped, that would have been a realistic possibility. But this was one of those seasons where, you know, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And I think if it had been more of the same, you might have seen a front office looking at making some trades to try to shake things up. But now, with a brand new front office coming in, I think that they're going to want to be able to see these players in game competition, in practice settings, and make their own evaluations, which could mean that any major changes may be delayed to next season's trade deadline as opposed to anything happening this offseason. There's an incomplete on Wendell Carter Jr. He missed a lot of his first 2 seasons because of injuries. Lauri Markkanen obviously took a step back in year 3. They just really don't know exactly what they have in those 2 guys. They don't know yet whether Kobe White can be a full-time point guard. So many unknowns with this team that I think with a new organization coming in, with the likelihood of a new coaching staff coming in, you're probably going to see at least for the first half of next season being an evaluation period before they really consider any significant changes.
When you mention the question of if the Bulls were to have some kind of involvement in this resumption of a season or a different sort of, you know, NIT kind of tournament with those other 7 bottom feeder teams, wondering who the coach of such an experiment would be, obviously Bulls fans are all thinking about Jim Boylan right now. And I think a lot of Bulls fans, when we got official word that the season had a plan in place to the league had a plan in place to resume the season and the Bulls were out of it, that once we knew the Bulls season was dead, we would get word that Jim Boylan was out. And that hasn't happened yet. Obviously, if the front office of the previous regime, the recently ousted one of John Paxson and Gar Forman, thought that putting the reins in Jim Boylan's hands was the best move, and then we just saw the season unfold as it did. One would deduce that Jim Boylan is not the right guy moving forward. AK has been very clear that he wants to take his time with these evaluations. He wants to get his feet inside the door of the Advocate Center, get to know Jim Boylan on a little bit more personal level before he is quick to make that decision. But to me, Mark, based on what we've heard with some of the interviews that have been done with some of the players already, and AK and Eversley asking certain, you know, people within the organization, what are your thoughts on Jim Boylan? All signs point to Boylan being out, not if, but when. Do you kind of see this playing out similarly?
Well, as our friend Casey Johnson has been reporting, that when Arturis Karnišević was hired, he was asked by Michael Reinsdorf and John Paxson to keep an open mind regarding Jim Boylan and the future of the coaching staff. Because of the pandemic, he was unable to come to Chicago and be in his office at the Advocate Center and be able to have face-to-face meetings and go over game tape and really get to know Jim on a personal basis. You know, he obviously just arrived in Chicago last week, and I'm sure some of those conversations have already taken place, and they've already gone through some film sessions, done some evaluation on individual players. Reality of it is, the likelihood is that the Bulls aren't going to play a meaningful NBA game again until sometime in December. So there's no rush to make a big decision on this. The draft isn't until October 15th, which is 4 months away. So there's nothing but time right now in terms of making an evaluation and a decision on the future of the coaching staff. And I think that Arturis wanted to be fair with Jim and his assistants, wanted to have individual meetings and wanted to hear what they thought about the situation. And I think that's what a good manager will do. He will get the input of everybody involved with the organization to try to figure out where the disconnect occurred and where some of these things we talked about, like Lowry taking a step back in year three. I mean, Arturis was very out front saying, that's very puzzling to me. We got to figure out what happened there. Why did he regress when all signs were pointing to him being a borderline all-star in year three, and instead he took a step back? So I think it may look to the fan base like this is being stretched out unnecessarily, but there are no time constraints that make this a decision that has to be made immediately. It's not like there's an A-list candidate that's out there that if you drag your feet, you're not going to get him. I know a lot of people are high on Kenny Atkinson, and I think he might be a decent choice, but it's not like hiring Kenny Atkinson is going to add 10 games to your win total automatically. I think that they'll do their due diligence. They'll talk to all the hot assistants that are around. Maybe Arturis has some guys in the international market that he wants to talk to. And I think ultimately you'll see a new coaching staff in place for the upcoming season. But I just feel like with everything that's gone on, you know, with the Bulls' history with head coaches, I think they want to make sure that this is done in a first-class manner and that Karnišević feels comfortable with the time frame and executing whatever moves he's going to make.
I was going to say, you brought it up there right at the end, but we saw a comment come from Rick Carlisle, the president of the basketball coaches, the NBA Coaches Association.
Right.
And he basically said that he was telling his coaches, any of the coaches, to basically avoid the Bulls at all possible. I'm wondering if this plays a factor in the easing and, I guess, massaging, if you will, of letting Jim Boylan go, but trying to do it the right way to show coaches, hey, you know what, something has changed here. Do you feel like in the past that Bulls coaches have been, I don't know, not necessarily treated bad, but the relationship has kind of torn at the end of a lot of these coaches, and that's something that the Bulls should look at as part of repairing this, and with the new front office coming in, being able to do that? Is that why maybe playing a factor into Jim Boylan just not being canned day one when both of these guys were hired?
Oh, I think that definitely plays into it. Obviously, you just look back at the history of the coaches that were let go during the Paxson-Forman regime, and you know, most of them left with bad feelings about the situation. So I think that's the nature of professional sports. When a coach is fired, he's not going to be all rosy about the way things were handled. But with the Bulls situation, you know, you had a couple of Christmas Eve firings, and obviously the hostility between the front office and Tom Thibodeau at the end of his run here. I think that's the image that they want to change, or at least a perception that they need to change in the coaching marketplace. But when you look at the positives of the Chicago situation, the fact that it's in a huge market, the Bulls brand is a worldwide brand, you know, they should have the ability with the right support from the front office to be competitive for top free agents right now. Their cap sheet looks pretty good, so they should be in the position to add to their young core. There are a lot of positives to this situation, but when you look at the past experience, the Bulls have traditionally hired coaches that do not have NBA head coaching experience. And when you look at the names being mentioned, Ime Udoka and Adrian Griffin, a couple of guys that do not have NBA head coaching experience, and right now they're considered two of the more likely choices to be the next head coach.
The Bulls, as you've said, Mark, have plenty of time to make their moves, knowing just how long this abnormal offseason will be for them before they get back to real basketball or even something like the draft, which you said is still 4 months away. The roster, as it's currently constructed, I think, has some issues, but also, as we heard AK say, this is far too talented of a roster to have given the results that they showed this season, being a team that was 20-plus games under 500. I think a lot of Bulls fans felt similarly that, hey, maybe this wasn't a team without a doubt bound for the playoffs, but at least should have been more competitive and won more games than they did. Looking to this offseason and what adjustments to the roster might be made, it seems like the Bulls are a little bit hamstrung given the fact that with all of this loss of revenue, instead of going up, the cap will stay the same or possibly even go down. And the Bulls, assuming certain things like they're not going to stretch Felicio, assuming Otto picks up his $28 million option, will not have a whole lot of flexibility. They do have a couple of decisions on on the immediate horizon with restricted free agents ending their rookie deals like Chris Dunn and Denzel Valentine. So I think most likely they're going to put the Lauri Markkanen extension on the back burner for now. What do you see them doing when they come in to evaluate? Do you see them identifying Chris Dunn or Denzel Valentine as players that they would like to keep based on what they're watching on tape right now?
Because of the cap situation, I think it's very unlikely either of those guys will be back with the Bulls next season. I think Chris Dunn and his representatives look at the fact that he was the fifth overall pick when he came out of college, and they're probably looking at him as a player that deserves a contract in the range of $8 to $10 million annually. And if I'm the Bulls, I do not give him that kind of money. He's an excellent defensive player. He was second in the league in steals this past season, but he's injury prone. He can't shoot the ball from three-point range, and I think in today's NBA, even though he's an excellent defensive player, he's not a guy that you're going to want to tie up a lot of cap space on. Denzel Valentine never distinguished himself in his time with the Bulls, and I think that you just say, you know, thank you for your services, and hopefully he can find a home where he has a chance to get into the rotation. I think they have to be really careful in maintaining their cap flexibility. I know that's a phrase that people hate because it's something that Gar Forman said all the time, that we have, you know, cap flexibility going forward. But, you know, you look at the free agent class of 2021, if this front office can show that they're a player-friendly group, that their connections with different agents and players around the league can be productive, who knows, maybe they can get a meeting with one of these elite stars, and you'd love to have the flexibility to be able to bring in a top player to go with this young group. Because, you know, if you just add another rookie, you know, with this top 10 pick they're going to have coming up, and you make a couple of changes around the edges, you're really not going to make a big jump forward next year unless Lauri Markkanen wakes up and realizes that he's an all-star player. He just hasn't been playing like one. There's no miracle fix to this. The likelihood is you're going to have a first-time head coach. You're still going to have one of the youngest rosters in the NBA. The only way you're going to make a major upgrade to the talent level is either with a bold trade or with getting a dynamic free agent, and they're not going to be able to do anything in free agency this offseason. That would have to come in the summer of 2021. They do have the pieces to consider trades. It'll be interesting to see if Karnišević makes enough conclusions that maybe a guy or two doesn't fit, that he considers, you know, pairing that lottery pick with one of the young guys that he doesn't think is a great fit and maybe making a move in that regard. But I think that would be the only possibility of really making a significant impact to the roster for next
And let's
season.
Finish up on a positive note, Mark. It was a rough season for the Bulls. It was a rough up and down start to the season for their most recent number 7 pick, Coby White, the kid from UNC. Because he, you know, he dazzled in a couple of games early in the season with some hot shooting nights, but that was, you know, in and around a lot of underwhelming performances where also overall you saw his shooting percentages really, you know, just kind of bottoming out, maybe at one point admitting that he hit the rookie wall. But then the positive note, the little silver lining of this dark, ugly cloud that was this season, was watching Kobe perform in the last month or so leading up to the league suspension because of the pandemic, and even finally earning that starting nod from Jim Boylan, taking over for the vet Tomáš Satoranský. What were your thoughts on that real hot streak over the final month or so of Kobe's rookie season, and what do you see for him as a potential step to take in his second year with the Bulls?
I was really encouraged by what I saw from Kobe late in the year. He looks like he could be, you know, that dynamic type of scorer, kind of a Ben Gordon type player that really heats up and can really have these high scoring quarters and really change the momentum of the game. Whether or not he's a pure point guard, I don't know. I mean, he has better size than Gordon at almost 6'5". I think he has the skill set that he could be a very good NBA point guard. It's just more of a mentality thing, and maybe working with a coach that gives him a little more flexibility and tries to refine his point guard skills will help in that regard. I think that they have a really good prospect going forward. I mean, when you look at the rookie class of 2019, you could make the argument that Kobe White maybe had the third best season out of any rookie, and that's pretty good for the Bulls getting where they did at number 7. I think that the pairing of White and LaVine is going to have some challenges on the defensive end, and maybe you'd have a situation where you get into a your turn, my turn type of offense, you know, similar to what we see in Portland with C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard. I think it can work, but you have to make sure that you have the right system in place and the right coaching staff to really develop two guys who are both shot creators and like to have the ball in their hands. But I think the Bulls made a good pick at number 7 there, and I think that he's going to be part of the mix going forward.
So who are they picking with number 7 this time around?
You know, I really hope they trade the pick. This isn't a good draft, which, of course, is going to reduce the value of the pick. I think that you would have to look at pairing it, as I mentioned, with one of your young core players to maybe get something back. You know, Wendell Carter Jr. has been pretty outspoken about saying that he's playing out of position at center at being 6'9", and he was lost in the offense last season. You know, as you know from watching the games and when we did a couple of years ago in the green room, he would catch the ball mid-post. He wouldn't even look at the rim. And at Duke, I thought he was a pretty good offensive prospect. You know, he had that nice little baseline 15-footer. He could shoot the jump hook with either hands. And now, you know, they basically turned him into a screener and a rim protector, and he really had no role in the offense. Again, maybe that's something with a new front office and likely a new coaching staff in place that they'll encourage him to be more aggressive on the offensive end and have more of an impact there. But if Karnišević and Mark Eversley decide that, you know, we need a bigger 7-foot type rim protector, maybe you go after a James Wiseman or a Onyeka Okongwu in the draft and then decide that maybe we can get along without Wendell, package him with that pick. Maybe you can bring in a legitimate small forward that can make an impact with this team going forward.
Mark, you got to be careful with that compliment to Wendell and his screening ability. You don't want to upset Felicio or Jim Boylan because, you know, according to Boylan, Felicio's the best screener on the team, and he really rolls to the rim with force.
That's right. You got to roll with force to the rim. That was one of those great phrases. You know, I really felt bad for Wendell. He's a really good kid. He's really conscientious. And his rookie season, he emerged as one of the leaders in terms of being outspoken and talking about what was going on with the team. And both of his NBA seasons have been short-circuited by long-term injuries. And I hope it works out for him here. I know that with the NBA really going more to small ball, I think he can play center at his size. I think that if they give him a bigger role in the offense and say, you know what, it's okay if you shoot that elbow jumper or shoot from the baseline or try to make a move down in the post, I think that he'll have a better feeling about his overall situation, and maybe we'll see the best of Wendell Carter Jr. That's why I think, going back to what we discussed about possible offseason moves, the likelihood is that this front office is going to want to get a new coaching staff in place, is going to make their own evaluations about the young core pieces, and then maybe by midseason next year they'll have a better handle on who should stay and who should go.
And on that optimistic note, we will let you go. Mark, as always, we appreciate your time. He's Mark Schanowski. For all of his Bulls and NBA takes, follow him on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. You can also catch him making his rounds on Chicago sports talk radio stations with regularity. Mark, enjoy your summer. Hopefully the next time we talk, we'll have some more tangible Bulls rules and NBA notes to talk about.
Yeah, let's get the games back. I'm barely hanging on. Yeah.
Yeah. We're right there with you, buddy. Until next time, appreciate it and be well.
Thanks,
my friend.
I had a lot of fun.
Thanks, Mark.
What was Felicio doing?
I'm not sure.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks again to Mark Schanowski for coming on the podcast, spending about 35, 40 minutes with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. Catch him once the G League comes back into action. Catch him doing color analysis for the Windy City Bulls. Got a really good insight into the G League, which isn't talked about all that much. So it was kind of cool to hear Mark talk about that. So follow him on Twitter at Mark Schanowski. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck. Thanks to our sponsors today in Blinkist and RockAuto.com. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com